Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Wednesday, the 28th of July, Caritas Internationalis urges decision makers to include the rights of the poor at discussions at the Food Systems Pre-Summit in Rome. The UN Refugee Convention marks its 70th anniversary, and the Vatican trial over the use of Secretariat of State funds is adjourned until October. In the Vatican, I'm Lydia O'Kane. The United Nations is convening a crucial food systems summit in September in New York. It's part of the Decade of Action to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. The purpose is to help create healthier, more sustainable and equitable food systems. In preparation for the summit, a three-day pre-summit was organised in Rome, which concludes today. On this occasion, Caritas Internationalis urged decision makers to include the rights of the poor in all discussions and to ensure meaningful participation of local producers and consumers, especially women. Robin Gomes has more on the story.
Caritas Internationalis, the confederation of 165 Catholic, Relief, Development and Social Service organizations operating in over 200 countries and territories worldwide, said that both the Rome pre-summit and the September summit must not be missed opportunities to engage in a durable transformation of food systems. It said this is all the more necessary now that the COVID-19 pandemic has accelerated and aggravated pre-existing inequalities in access to food. Several millions of people are expected to experience food insecurity and malnutrition in the months and years to come, it said. According to UN figures, up to 811 million people faced hunger in 2020, as many as 161 million more than in 2019. 3 billion people cannot afford to eat healthier either. Poverty, income inequality, and the high cost of food are responsible for these ills, and climate change and conflict are consequences and drivers of this catastrophe. Stressing that access to food is a basic human right, Caritas said that food security cannot be ensured and food systems cannot be transformed by just promoting industrial agriculture, which, on the long run, will only contribute to excluding more people from the supply chain and will also generate more injustice in the access to food. In this process, Aloysius John, Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis, stressed that the prime role of women in traditional agriculture in their own lands must be recognized. Women, he said, are part of the agricultural sector and they are responsible for 60-80% of food production in developing countries. But at the same time, they are also the ones who encounter untold challenges due to lack of access to land rights, credit, production resources, and seeds capital. John said women must be helped to put in place cooperatives and local supply chains that would enable them to sell their products. I'm Robin Gomes.
Among those taking part in the pre-summit is the Food and Agriculture Organization's Assistant Director General, Mario Lubkin. He spoke with Vatican News about what needs to be done to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals of zero hunger and zero poverty.
The point now is to try to understand what we need to do in which way, because we are only nine years from now till 2030. So in the end of what the countries, the prime minister, the president decided in New York in 2015 to achieve in 2030, the famous Sustainable Development Goals. And you know that in the Sustainable Development Goals, you are the SDG 1 and SDG 2, so zero hunger, zero poverty. In that sense, if we are not moving so quickly, we will not achieve these goals in 2030. Just for this, now the point is, if we are clear or relatively clear which is the picture, now is to understand how we can move. And one of the most important aspects that we discussed during these 3 days in Rome, and we are discussing during these 3 days in Rome, is the fact that we need to have an integrative thinking about how is this process about hunger. So only with this integrative thinking, we can achieve in 2030 zero hunger. It's a challenge. We are not a lot of time. We have more clear ideas from this conference in Rome. The president will ratify this during the United Nations Assembly in September, but it's a process that starts now, and we need to run a lot with clear ideas, with concrete action to try to achieve zero hunger in 2030.
This Thursday, the 28th of July, marks the 70th anniversary of the UN Refugee Convention, the convention that has remained largely unchanged, aside from an additional protocol of 1967, has had broad political support since it was drafted and adopted in the wake of World War II. Speaking to Vatican Radio, Chiara Cardoletti, the UN Refugee Agency's representative to the Holy See, Italy and San Marino, explained that the convention has set the foundations for legislation that guarantees solidarity and protection for refugees, but it also provides opportunities to find new solutions in a changing world scenario.
The 1951 Convention as a fundamental instrument to protect refugees, which has been obviously drafted right after the Second World War with an objective not so much to provide a definition of who is a refugee, but rather to provide clarity as to the treatment that the refugees would be receiving in the various European countries where they were at the time located. It was a convention that, in the intention of the drafter, aimed at providing a vision, obviously, of the past, of what had happened during the Second World War, but also that gave lots of opportunities to remain a flexible legal instrument for the future. For example, we are looking at a document that is not exclusively focusing on the state as an actor of persecution, but rather also on the possibility, as we are currently seeing right now, of others being also actors of persecution. Clearly, the world has evolved since the Second World War. We're seeing a very different context today, a context that is no longer entrenched in the context of the Second World War or the Cold War after, but rather in a context where we have today much more complex conflicts that are obviously underpinned by a variety of reasons, and where defining who is a refugee is obviously a whole lot more complex. But clearly the 1951 Convention, which is one of the most ratified legal instruments on earth, is to be read flexibly and is to be read with in mind the best protection that can be provided to refugees. There are lots of a variety of practices in the protection of refugees today. We know that 90% of refugees currently live in developing countries very close to where they have fled. And so today, the real challenge is not so much that of defining who is a refugee, but rather who is going to be responsible for their treatment and their protection. And I think here, the 1951 Convention has very much laid the foundation of international solidarity and international cooperation being at the basis of this instrument, and therefore the importance of ensuring that states take these responsibilities seriously and obviously provide that protection to refugees. Certainly, the Global Compact on Refugees aims precisely at providing support to all those countries who have opened their borders and their arms to refugees, and making sure that they continue doing so while further sharing responsibility also in countries in the industrialized world, so that they can continue doing what they have been doing and maintain this tradition of hospitality and generosity for refugees.
Bishops in Northern Ireland have voiced their opposition against government moves to expand abortion services by March 2022. Father Benedict Mayaki reports.
The Catholic bishops of Northern Ireland have spoken up against the controversial decision last week by authorities to direct the Executive and Department of Health to make abortion services available by the 21st of March 2022. In a statement on Tuesday, the bishop said that the move, a directive by Secretary of State for Northern Ireland Brandon Lewis, is the latest in a line of decisions by the current government which threatens the fragile balance of relationships at the heart of the Good Friday Agreement. Changes to abortion laws in Northern Ireland were liberalized in 2019 following legislation passed at Westminster during the absence of devolution. Since then, the commissioning of services was stalled due to disagreements within the devolved administration. However, on the 22nd of July, Northern Ireland Secretary Brandon Lewis directed the Department of Health to implement more liberal abortion services amid opposition from some Northern Irish ministers. Lewis said that he was issuing the direction because of the ongoing stalemate among the five-party executive, adding that he has a legal and moral obligation to ensure that women and girls in Northern Ireland are afforded their rights and can access the health care. In light of the move, the bishops noted that with many others, they have consistently held that the right to life of every person, irrespective of stage of development or ability, is the prior and essential right of all other human beings. They also highlighted that our shared search for peace is driven in no small part by our collective rejection of the brutality and demeaning of human dignity that occurs when the right to life is diminished in any way. In this regard, they expressed concern that the failure to extend this sensitivity and care to our own fellow human beings in the womb, as well as to pregnant mothers, will one day be seen as a grave moral blindness on the part of this generation. The bishops went on to note that in unilaterally imposing this decision, it is as if the Westminster government believed the answer to the issue of providing compassionate care for a woman and her unborn child in pregnancy can be framed simply and exclusively as a healthcare issue. The bishop said that Westminster has imposed an unjust law and called on all Christians and people of goodwill not to stay silent and to completely ignore the fact that unborn children are human beings worthy of protection. I'm Father Benedict Mayaki.
Antonio Li Hui was consecrated today as coadjutor bishop of the Chinese Diocese of Pingliang. He's the fifth Chinese bishop appointed since the provisional agreement on the naming of bishops signed by the Vatican and the People's Republic of China came into force in fall of 2018. According to the director of the Holy See Press Office, Matteo Bruni, the appointment was made by Pope Francis in January of this year. The trial over the use of Secretariat of State funds held its first hearing on Tuesday in the courtroom of the Vatican Museums. The defence attorneys for the 10 defendants presented preliminary motions. The next hearing is scheduled on October the 5th. Thaddeus Jones tells us more.
The large courtroom set up in the Vatican Museums hosted on Tuesday, July 27th, the first trial hearing in the Vatican over the alleged illicit deals made with the Secretary of State funds, starting with the sale of the Sloane Avenue building in London. Giuseppe Pignatone and Judges Venerando Marano and Carlo Bonsano presided over the hearing, which lasted 7 hours, with the presence of around 30 lawyers, journalists, and gendarmes. Only two of the 10 defendants were present, Monsignor Mauro Carlino in the courtroom early in the morning, and Cardinal Giovanni Angelo Becciu, the former substitute to the Secretary of State, accused of embezzlement, abuse of office, and subornation. The cardinal, from whom the Pope revoked the prerogatives of the cardinalate in September 2020, attended the entire hearing. At the end of the hearing, he recalled that he had always been obedient to the Pope, who has sent him to trial. He said he was not worried, and he said he had the confidence that the judges will see the facts clearly, and his great hope is that the certainty that they will recognize his innocence. He also announced that he had given a mandate to his lawyers to denounce Monsignor Alberto Perlasca and Francesca Immaculata Chacqui for slander. At the beginning of the hearing, Pignatone communicated the extension of the terms for the presentation of evidence and petitions for the respective defenses. He also gave the floor to the lawyers who made their statements and requests, which were taken into consideration. After all were heard and the proceedings reached a conclusion, following an hour and 20 minutes of council chamber, President Pignatone revoked the Vatican's arrest warrant for one of the defendants and reserved the right to decide on the exceptions and requests of the lawyers. The next trial hearing is scheduled for October 5th. For a full story on this news, just go to vaticannews.va where there's a full and detailed report. I'm Thaddeus Jones.
Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, be sure to check out our web portal at www.vaticannews.va. You can also catch the latest updates on our Facebook page or on Twitter. Many thanks goes to Joe Moriello in the studio in the Vatican. Thank you for joining us.